Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to the I and Us on Joy 94.9 with your intersex hosts, Paul and Little Jace, a fun, uplifting and informative show about the intersex community by the intersex community for all of us.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the I in Us, the show that is about the intersex community by the intersex community for all of us. It's me, Paul, your wonderful host. And Little Jace, I would normally be introducing today. I've given Little Jace the day off to be able to attend to their homework. They are doing the radio course. You may have heard us say that a few times over the past few weeks here at Joy Media, and have some very pressing timelines. So Little Jace isn't here today, but you have me, Paul. I would like to begin by acknowledging that we are broadcasting from the lands of the Bunurong people, the unceded lands, and pay our respects to elders past, present, emerging and future. These lands always were and always will be the lands of the Bunurong people. Now, we have an absolutely fantastic show lined up for you this evening. We will be talking to Morgan Carpenter about the history of intersex advocacy within the Australian context. Because intersex people have been on these lands since time immemorial, but today we'll be focusing on intersex people, how they've been perceived, interpreted, and indeed treated in the post-colonial period of Australia. And to be honest, the pre-colonial period is none of our business. And in the future, I may have opportunities to interview some First Nations members of our community, intersex or otherwise, those involved in health and so forth, and they can share what they know of their communities at that time. Morgan Carpenter is the Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia and has been fighting the good fight for intersex people all over the world for more than 20 years. Welcome, Morgan, to the I in Us.
Oh, well, thank you for that really generous invitation, Paul. It's great to be on the program and you know, great to be here with you talking about, you know, what we're doing and why we do what we do and the situation that we've been confronted with for so long in terms of people's awareness, understanding, and willingness to act on the issues that we raise. So, yeah, it's good to be here. Thank you.
That's fine. And I was thinking, which is pre-colonial America, because it's 1700s, that they think that George Washington, president, in fact, had the same sex chromosome variations as myself, XXY, which is quite a fascinating thing to learn that, you know, I could be president one day. But what we're talking about today, as I said, is the Australian context. And do you have much insight yourself into how intersex people were perhaps treated in Australia during the 19th century or the early 20th century? I was looking up Wikipedia just the other day and I saw, of course, and I never thought about it, but often these kind of freak shows and stuff had our people on there as the bearded women and all this sort of stuff. I mean, how we've been perceived by society as a whole is not very positive. And just wondering if you might be able to shed some light on that.
Yeah, so I think it's worth me, or it's important probably to say, you know, I'm not a historian by trade. I'm actually a bioethicist. And I've tried to uncover aspects of the historical treatment of people with intersex variations, and particularly in terms of policy, treatment, and medicalization, I guess. So I haven't really myself looked at the 19th century. I think really the materials I've found so far really begin at the beginning of the 20th century and become much more frequent in the last years of the last century and in the, and in this century. So, you know, you could almost get the impression that we're a very recent population, some newfangled group that has never been understood before, which really isn't true. Because, as you say, people with intersex variations have been here in these lands since time immemorial, and the history of our treatment within the context of Australia as a kind of a settler country, you know, comes with so much baggage from Europe, particularly from the UK legal system. And a lot of that still has an impact on how we're treated now. And I think that really that history isn't very well understood in terms of that kind of legal medical history, which is what I've been looking at. And I think people also don't really realize just how long doctors and lawyers and policymakers in Australia have been talking about us as a population and actually making decisions about how we should be treated without there even being an intersex movement at the time that some of those events happened. Yeah. So it's really quite interesting. And I think that really that the history sets the scene for where we are now, because the history illustrates the existence of so many misconceptions about who we're supposed to be, really, and often conflicting ideas about who we're supposed to be. And as a bioethicist, that's been particularly the kind of issue that I've been really interested in, because in those contradictions, I mean, we often live them. Or we know we deal with different people having some radically different notions, competing, conflicting notions about who it is that we're supposed to be in different spaces, whether we're at school, at university, at work, or out in social spaces. People can have really odd, different ideas about who it is that we're supposed to be, and even what it is we're supposed to care about. And those ideas often have a very limited or unrealistic idea about who we actually are.
I think what's interesting also about what you're saying is, and we're often alluding to, say, those who work in the medical space or the education space or the health space, but we're also talking about ourselves. We, as a community of people, often have very different ideas about who we are as individuals and who intersex people are as a community. And it can be very challenging for us then to provide guidance on how we want to be represented when one body, it might be Intersex Human Rights Australia or another organization, has on their website, the website of course, Intersex Human Rights Australia, where you work, some very specific guidelines on the definition of intersex, and yet an organization might consult with an individual intersex person or another organization and hear different things that regarding, say, gender. Whereas globally, we're trying to say, oh, intersex is not a gender identity. It's not a third biological sex. And yet there's some different
of these things,
views.
Some of these things are really complicated as well, you know, and trying to give people simple, clear guidance that they can follow from a policy perspective can mean compromise or, you know, an attempt to kind of reach an accommodation between us as a population about what it is that we want. So, yeah, talking to individuals, you can find that different individuals have different ideas about what having an intersex variation means to them.
The I in Us, bringing you inspiring interviews, moving personal stories, and intersex news and information to inspire, inform, move, and uplift you.
You're listening to The I in Us, a show about the intersex community, by the intersex community, for all of us. And we are joined this evening by Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia, Morgan Carpenter. We've just listened to This Boy's in Love by The Presets, which Morgan chose for this episode due to the uplifting nature of this song, which makes him feel happy and reminds him of positive times spent with friends. Before the song, we were talking about how different intersex people may have different ideas about what it means to be intersex, that gender and sexual identities are as diverse for the intersex community as the rest of the community, and how, as an intersex community generally, we choose to define what intersex is
and indeed is not. Can you elaborate on that, Morgan?
There are those amongst us who are cisgender and heterosexual, who are not LGBT at all. There are people with intersex variations who are queer or trans or both. And both of those framings as well about people being, you know, cisgender, heterosexual, queer or trans also assumes that we're adults or adolescents and able to express an identity. And the issues that we care about as an organization really begin much, much earlier. You know, we're concerned as a community and as an organization at Intersex Human Rights Australia with how infants and children are treated and how clinical processes that happen before birth happen to make sure that they are not discriminatory in the application of medical treatment or in kinds of ways that parents or embryos or fetuses are treated. So, you know, we can't talk about those issues through a kind of a lens or framework about identity at all anyway. So anyway, as a community, we are really diverse. And it's important for leaders and organizations who work on intersex issues to understand that and grapple with that and do our best to acknowledge, respect, and really support or facilitate the diversity of views there are in our community. But there are also decisions we have to take about where things that some individuals might seek for themselves have impacts on other people with the same biological characteristics. And so there are limits to that.
It's a really fascinating conversation, and I'm really, really, really keen to delve into that a little bit more and get a sense of that again from within the Australian context. So thank you for providing us with that insight. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your involvement in Australia, Morgan, since you arrived from overseas, or, you know, the sort of thing that has led you to be the Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia and some of the key work that you've been involved in.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I've been in Australia for a long time now, back and forward between here and mostly Ireland and Europe. I wasn't born in Ireland. I spent a lot of time there, though. Really, I got to know quite a few people in the community while I was overseas and when I arrived here, particularly through a website online that was active maybe around 20 years ago called Bodies Like Ours, that was founded by an awesome woman called Betsy Driver. And it was really the first online community where people could come together with lived experience of having, you know, intersex variations. And then I met quite a few people here in Australia and got involved in the organization that's now Intersex Human Rights Australia, back when it was getting set up. So I became one of the founder directors back in 2010. Fundamentally, Intersex Human Rights Australia exists to change how we're treated, including how we're treated by medicine and by law and society. And, you know, that really begs a question about what do we want to change? Yeah. And really, we want to change the medical model of how doctors understand and treat people with intersex variations. We want to change how the legal system understands us. And we want to try and make sure that individuals and families have good information and social and community connection to help make good decisions. And we want to make sure that the diversity in our community is nurtured and protected and respected. And when I talk about those issues, I mean, what do I mean? And if you look at those different issues in terms of medical treatment, we know that at least from the 1960s, that people with visibly different bodies would be treated surgically. So what do we want to change? We want to change medical practice because we know that at least beginning in the 1960s, we have evidence from the 1960s the clinicians have sought to change the bodies of infants and children to make them fit ideas about how girls and boys and women or men should look and function.
Within the binary, the binary notions of maleness and femaleness that are quite narrow, we're now realizing.
Well, yeah, somewhat idealized narrow ideas about how girls or boys and women or men should look and function in terms of particularly sexual anatomy. There's an idea that we should grow up to be capable of cisgender heterosexual intercourse, which, you know, can work to an extent for people who grow up to be cisgender and heterosexual. But irrespective of how people identify when they get older, there are other questions and issues that are about, you know, sexual function and sensation can be impaired by early medical treatment. So intervening early can have lifelong consequences for people, you know, irrespective of identity. We know, for example, that women with congenital adrenal hyperplasia who've had early surgical interventions can then grow up to have not only impaired sexual function and sensation, but also issues with urinary continence and a whole range of other issues that are not very well documented and that clinicians are still trying to understand themselves. That's an example of how early surgical intervention can have a really long-term effect on people. Our goal then is to try and make sure that people have the maximum opportunity to consent or to determine what happens to our own bodies ourselves. Can mean that people will choose surgery. Yeah,
absolutely. They'll make the decision for themselves. And this is a really important message too, that recently, and I'd like to touch on it a little bit later in the program, recently the ACT has legislated for surgeries without consent of the individual being effectively outlawed. But they've also done some wonderful work to put peer support and individuals who are able to offer parents and others support with making those decisions into the hospital, I think, something like that. But you can clarify that for us a little bit later on. But we're not...
We can talk about that later.
Yeah, but where it's medically necessary, we understand that sometimes those surgeries will take place, but that's not what the legislation in the ACT is doing. It's not overriding when they need to happen. Well, a decision is made with the consent of the parent still, you know, for an operation to occur, because it's medically necessary. It's about where they're being made for social reasons, which I think we can touch on.
Yeah, ideas about how girls and boys should look. Yeah,
exactly.
Some of the language here is really confronting, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
and I don't know if it's words that we can say on the radio, but I mean, doctors and judges even have talked about, you know, surgery to enhance the appearance of young girls' genitals, which sounds extraordinary if you're using that language for any other population other than people with intersex variations.
Hey, this is Jess Malboy, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
You are listening to The Eye in Us with Paul, and today's special guest is Morgan Carpenter, the Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia. It's so far we've had a very interesting conversation with Morgan about the history of how intersex people are perceived generally and in Australia, and the impact that can have on individuals due to operations, or it might be hormone treatment, but also in a social context, how we are perceived, and/or, which is what we're all striving to do, of course, the level with which we are actually accepted. Morgan, you are a long-time intersex human rights campaigner, and in 2013, 10 years anniversary last year, you designed what is now an internationally embraced and recognized intersex flag. And it really isn't just a flag. It's a symbol that has united our community across the world. And for this show, as I've been getting in contact with intersex communities across the world to potentially be interviewed. The flag is everywhere, and people stand under it and wave it, and it represents who we are, and it's fantastic. And could you tell us about the concept of the flag? What led to you even thinking, we need a flag?
Oh, yeah. It's actually exactly what I was thinking about when I was saying that there are some very different ideas out in the world about who people with intersex variations are supposed to be, what we're supposed to care about, who we are. You know, so there is this medical model that says essentially that we're disordered females and males who need to have medical intervention in order to be able to integrate socially into society. And that's ultimately what those medical interventions are intended to do. They're constructing future cisgender heterosexual adults capable of sexual intercourse without really any concern for sexual function or sensation. But then often socially and actually legally, and really going back in Australia, back to the 1970s, there have been these ideas that we're a third sex, that we're neither female nor male, and that the way in which we're integrated socially is to create new categories of sex for us. So back in 2013, when I created the flag, I was really kind of confronted by a lot of media requests and stories that were illustrated not with real people, but with, you know, toilet door symbols, you know, like symbols of men or women on toilets, as if, you know, to problematize the question about which toilet are we going to go into.
You know, in Lithuania, I saw that.
Sorry?
So in Lithuania, along one of the main railway lines, one of the stations I was at in Lithuania, there's a bar. Yeah. So an old railway station's been turned into a bar. And I had a drink with my friend in Lithuania and went to go to the bathroom. And indeed, they had their toilets, one with XX and one with XY. And then immediately in front of the doors to the toilets, they had a whole lot of empty silver beer barrels. And so I went back to the bar and I said, my sex chromosomes are XXY. Do you want me to pee behind the barrels? And,
well, yeah, it's pretty reductive, isn't it? But, you know, but you probably did know which toilet you're going to go in. I mean,
of course I knew which one I would be accepted, but I couldn't help myself. It was 5 years ago.
And yeah, you know. Look, it's a really good educational opportunity, isn't it? But if you're confronted with every news story about people with any range of intersex variations, what's going through the photo editors' heads is the notion of, you know, these intersex people are neither female nor male, and they all should be using a third category. They all have to. The primary thing that we're concerned about every day is which toilet are we going to go into.
And it doesn't help that the term that is used to describe us is intersex, meaning, you know, between the sexes. So we don't have another term at this point in time to describe ourselves. But I think that does contribute to the confusion around, therefore, if we're between male and female, we must be a third sex category and neither male nor female. It's one of our great challenges in educating the community that there's a spectrum of maleness and femaleness, and we might be a little bit towards the outside, but we're not that.
So, but we're all different as well, Paul. And you know, many of us do grow up to be heterosexual and cisgender. Many of us grow up to be queer or trans. We're all different. Each intersex variation is associated with, you know, empirical data on the likely adult gender identity that we'll have. And we're really different. And really, we should be, I think, trying to find some way of respecting that diversity rather than trying to push us to be neither or pushing us to surgically fit ideas and hormonally fit ideas about who we should be. We should each be able to make our own decision. Anyway, but we're talking about the flag. So really, I was confronted by these ideas that the key things we care about are toilets, and we're illustrated by photos of toilets. Or there were stories that used pink and blue as, you know, a question mark, or, you know, there were all sorts of things like that. And there's even a suggestion that there's a transgender flag, which is pink, blue, and white. And there's been a suggestion that the white is for people who identify as intersex. So really what I wanted to do was try and create a symbol that could be used in place of all of those symbols that would actually have a meaning that would be broadly relevant to us, irrespective of our identity. Yeah. So irrespective of whether we grew up to be cisgender, not female, male, however we want to understand ourselves. And the symbol I came up with was a circle, a purple circle on a yellow background. And the circle really is trying to come up with something that kind of means that we're whole or complete in ourselves without having to define ourselves in relation to anything else.
Well, I think you've been very successful in doing that, Morgan. So thank you for the legacy that really is that moment in time where you, if little Jace was here, would probably said had a brain fart. But anyway, they're not. So when you did think that it would be great to have a flag that represented us, and then over 10 years really has been embraced by our community.
Hi, this is David Campbell, and you're listening to Joy 94.9, and so am I.
You are with the I and Us with Paul and our very special guest, Morgan Carpenter, and we were talking about the notion of the third sex. So, Morgan, this is a really interesting subject.
Yeah, convoluted as well. There's a long history to this notion of intersex as a third sex. And as you say, I mean, some people look at the word intersex and think it must mean something about that. But actually, you know, there's a lot of information that we have now on law and policy in relation to people with intersex variations. We know that in the English legal system that Australia inherited, hermaphrodites were recognized. Early common law said that hermaphrodites had to be treated in line with the prevailing or predominant sex. Yeah, so that's the history of how hermaphrodites are treated. That, of course, is where people are visibly different and where there's a question about whether somebody is female or male. But in Australia, that kind of traditional model was broken in 1979 when the family court made a decision that somebody, a man, assigned male at birth, who lived as a man, was not a man at all, but a true hermaphrodite. Because he was a true hermaphrodite, then
would you
male nor female.
I think it's worth unpacking what a true hermaphrodite is.
It's very difficult to use that language very clearly because ideas about what that means have changed over time.
So there's many intersex people who are older adults who would have been told as children that they were hermaphrodite, and now that language isn't applied to them, and yet it is applied to some intersex people. So sometimes some people are born with both
that
testes.
That word is so controversial as well.
It's so controversial.
You know, that language of hermaphrodite comes from Greek mythology, ultimately, and then it became a language in legal systems in Europe. And then the word was co-opted by medicine and biology to mean something a bit different, actually quite very precise. And these days, that word is not understood biologically to be possible in mammals. But yet many humans do have that language in our medical records, language of either true hermaphrodite or pseudo-hermaphrodite. Anyway, this judge in 1979 threw out the entire legal history of how hermaphrodites should be treated in the Western clinical, Western legal system, Western Christian legal system, and said that somebody who is a hermaphrodite is neither male nor female, and therefore his marriage should be annulled. And So ever since then, I think in Australia, we've been confronted with this notion that we're not female or male, that we're a third sex, and that that there needs to be space made for us in legislation. So there is actually a wave of legislation from the 1990s, particularly, that talks about people of indeterminate sex. Indeterminate sex is another term. This one comes from medicine. It comes from the International Classification of Diseases. But that language is still evident in some states in Australia in terms of anti-discrimination law. And it's used in ways that kind of construct us almost as this kind of mythological third sex entity. And it's very difficult for individuals or us as a community to understand how that law is actually supposed to relate to us, because it's so odd in its construction. It's thinking of this mythologized third sex category. Yeah, so we've really been trying to deal with this notion of intersex as a third sex in legislation and in legal policy and legal frameworks since the 1970s. And then in 2003, there were reports that somebody with XXY had convinced the Victorian government to give them an indeterminate birth cert, and they got the first X passport back in 2003. And that was reported as a real win for that person, Alex, as an intersex person. And, you know, in the reporting, Alex was talking about how, you know, not everybody with XXY understands themselves as belonging to a third sex, but yet it's become part of the idea about who we're supposed to be.
And in terms of who we're supposed to be, we've only got a few minutes left, Morgan, and I'm just wanting to just spend a few minutes, if we can, just touching on 2017 and the retreat that brought many intersex people together and the drafting of the Darlington Statement, because we'll direct people to the website as well at the end of the show. But I just think it's worth, you're a key part of that retreat.
Yeah.
So,
look, thank you, Paul. The Darlington retreat was a really amazing event. I think it was an event where we really brought together everybody that we knew that was visible and active in peer support or advocacy around Australia and Aotearoa New Zealand. And we talked about such a broad range of issues around peer support and around advocacy, trying to really identify what it is that we wanted to change. Yeah. And we drafted something called the Darlington Statement, which sets out an agenda or a list of demands, you know, what it is that we want to change. And it contains a lot of statements, both about changing medical practice, about changing these legal understandings, these ideas about who we are, that we know don't respect our diversity as a population. And it talks about education and a whole range of other issues as well, including resourcing for psychosocial support and peer support. Yeah, so really it's trying to agree a common set of demands for us as a community, bearing in mind that we're bringing together a really diverse group of people with different ideas about what it is that we want ourselves.
Yeah, and we do encourage everyone as individuals and organisations to go to the Intersex Human Rights website, and they can read the Darlington Statement, and they can also choose, we hope, to not only affirm that statement, which is a acknowledgement from our community to our community that you've read it and you think that what's within it is valid, but it also is an opportunity to apply that statement where it has relevancy to you as an individual, as I say, in the world or an organisation. And also there's so much information on the website at Intersex Human Rights Australia. So just Google it, you'll find it. We have today been talking to Morgan Carpenter as the Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia, also a wonderful friend of mine and definitely a friend of the intersex community across the world. So thank you very much for joining us, Morgan.
Yeah. Hey, look, Paul, thank you. It's been awesome to be on your program. It's gone so fast, and I feel like there's so much more we could talk about, really. So I hope it's been a bit of a primer for some people to understand a bit more about the history and really understand a bit more about how that's created a context for us to create this shared platform together and go on a journey together to try and change medicine and law and social understandings and try and create space for all of us.
Yeah? Absolutely.
And reduce the stigma and shame that we all face.
Yeah, and I say absolutely a lot on air. You will notice that out there. So bear with me, absolutely. And it has been wonderful having Morgan on the show. Next week, we actually have Bonnie Hart, who was also part of the Darlington Retreat. And Bonnie's going to be on the show talking about the history of peer support in Australia and Intersex Peer Support Australia and a whole lot of other work that's been going on in the background around how to unite our community through a whole range of different peer support platforms and counselling services and so forth. So I'm really excited to have Bonnie on the show next week. Good night, everyone. Thanks again, Morgan, for joining us, and we'll be speaking to you next week.
You've been listening to The Eye in Us with your intersex hosts, Paul and Little Jace. The Eye in Us, about the intersex community, by the intersex community, for all of us.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.